The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. From the New York Times bestselling author Chris Crowley, we have a brand new book, Thinner This Year, a younger next year book. Chris Crowley and Jen Sacek, PhD. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Jen, your first time in a book. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think this is my first time in a book, thanks to Chris.
All right, how did this all happen? How did you guys meet?
I was interested in doing a follow-on book to Young Next Year, which was a huge success. Sold 1.5 million copies. It's a cult book for baby boomers. Changed a bunch of lives. Nice book. Anyhow, I wanted to find somebody, especially to focus on the nutrition side. And I looked high and low. Harry Lodge, the guy who did the first book, didn't want to do it. Wonderful guy. But I looked all over the place and talked to a bunch of people. And somebody introduced me to Jen, and Jen and I met at a roadside junk place on the
Panera.
Mass Pike, some fast food place. And we were going to meet for 20 minutes or something or other. And 3 hours later, we were still talking a mile a minute. We had a terrific time. We made up our minds on the spot to do this book. Jen was way too busy. I was looking for a real serious scientist. Jen has a PhD in nutrition. After the PhD, she spent 4 years at Harvard Medical School looking at the same stuff through a microscope. And she's been teaching it and doing scientific studies ever since. So she's the real McCoy. She's young and smart. I'm old and funny.
All right. Well, Thinner This Year, how do you dummy it down? I mean, you're a PhD.
She doesn't.
Chris helps.
I'm in charge of dummy.
No, but the great thing is we have this sort of nice relationship where Chris, ex Wall Street litigator, really good at taking complex information and bringing it to the lay public. And so he talks about it in a really funny fashion, the day in the life of Chris trying to follow my rules and my prescription. And he has a lot of humor. So I think that's a great balance. And then it's balanced with my scientific chapters, which we've brought up to hopefully, something that people can sink their teeth into, but hard for some. But you also are really great at coming back and re-explaining it in some fun terms.
We decided early on that we wanted to take the chance of making this really serious stuff. You know, frankly, this is fairly chewy. Jen does not take the, she takes the gloves off. You're going to learn a lot. The idea was if people understood in some depth what goes on inside their bodies when they eat good stuff, what goes on inside their bodies when they eat junk, what goes on inside their bodies when they eat a ton of junk and when they don't exercise, blah, blah, blah. If you can take a look at that, it is A, very scary, and B, the difference for when you're doing it right. If you can look at the mechanism, if we can make it simple enough so you understand, it's very persuasive. Take a simple example, one line that we use in the book that I'm crazy about. We talk about belly fat. Belly fat, turns out, it's not just ugly or funny looking and whatnot. It's actually rotten for you. It's a font of inflammation, which makes you sick and kills you dead. We say, hey, listen, that little pot belly there, it's an open sewer inside your body, and at night the rats come out. Well, you read that sentence a couple of times, you can maybe go easier on the french fries. We'll see.
But you know, I guess I quit rubbing my belly now after reading this, because I was kind of proud of that, I guess.
Got to get rid of that puppy. It's causing you harm. It's killing your dad.
Not so cute.
Thinner This Year, a younger next year book. You guys recommend a lot of exercise, about an hour a day. Now, you know, there are books out there that I can do like just a few minutes a day and lose all kinds of weight. There's all kinds of products like artificial sweeteners with no calories, and I can lose weight there. And not only that, but, you know, I can cut my calories in half with a diet soda and a Snicker bar.
Jen's going to talk about almost all the rest of this stuff, but let me start on this one. That is such baloney. There's this signaling system inside your body, billions of signals all day long. When you turn 32, the default signal is to decay. The default signal is to rot and have you go downhill. When you exercise, you send a positive signal which overcomes the default to decay. It is a miracle that you only have to work out 6 days a week, 45 minutes to 60 minutes a week, a day. It is a terrific deal. It's the third most important thing in your life. You're lucky it's only that. And it is certainly not 7 minutes or 1 day a week or any of that stuff. That's baloney. Golf is a great game. It as exercise, baloney. It doesn't work. You got to go out there and do something that's hard for you. For some people, that's walking around the block. For some people, like Jen and especially Jen, but for me, it means you have to go and, you know, throw your leg over your bike and go for it. You got to work out hard for you 6 days a week until the day you die, which day you can take off if you like.
Yeah, I think the American public wants the quick fix, the quick gimmick. And, you know, people buy into that. They want the magic pill, the easy solution. Sure, you can cut half your calories and maybe lose a couple of pounds. But is that sustainable? Is that enjoyable? And if you eat that crappy food, the Snickers bar and the soda, and that's all you eat, you got to think about it. We talk at great length. That's sort of in our dead food category, meaning it has tons of calories. You know, the satiety factor is really small, so you're going to want more of that dead food. Also, doesn't have all those vital nutrients. And I know your grandmother told you and your mother told you eat your vitamins. You got to get it from good food. If you don't have that, like Chris had mentioned, all the signals in your body, billions of cells sending billions of signals trying to keep your body up and running. If you don't eat that from whole good food, you start to fall apart. And so really something like a soda, a lot of calories, zero nutrition, zero of those essential vitamins and minerals that we need, the 40 plus we need on a daily basis.
You know, we boast that we take you inside and show you how your body works, or really Jen does. Think about vitamins and minerals. We've all been hearing about it since we were kids. Now, nobody has the dimmest idea what the dickens it's all about. Read Jen and you discover what those vitamins and minerals really do. And it turns out they are extraordinarily important. I didn't know. Every single molecule in your body needs one of those vitamins or minerals to work properly. If it doesn't have it, it doesn't work right. Half of the stuff we eat has no vitamins and minerals. We're starving to death while we're getting fat. It's ridiculous. Jen will explain all that stuff, and then you may change the way you eat a little bit.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize the point that right now, currently in the American diet, about half our food is what we call dead food. Half of our daily intake is this food that's really low nutritional value, really high in saturated fats and added sugars with a lot of calories. It's not doing a heck of a lot for us besides making us fat.
Think about this number in the same vein as what Jen just said. I get all this stuff from her. 35%. 35% of the national diet, 35% of what people eat in terms of calories is stuff that is added, pumped into prepared foods. All the food in the middle 80% of the supermarket is
most
prepared foods. You know, almost all. Well, you know, you can get some frozen peas. They're great. But the almost all the prepared food, hamburger rolls have added sugar. It's ridiculous. Ketchup has added sugar. 35% of our diet is stuff that's pumped in to make it more addictive and to make it a little more shelf life. And it's rotten for you. Basic answer, literally, stay out of the middle of the supermarket. Eat fruit, veg, and a little bit of meat and fish.
You know, I just got the book a few days ago. I'm about a quarter of the way through it. And
that's far enough. I'd stop.
This is one of my favorite subjects. But, you know, I kind of skipped through a little bit to look at some of the breakfast ideas, lunch ideas, other ideas. I think, do you mention anything in there about artificial sweeteners, and what's your feeling on artificial sweeteners?
Yeah, I think, you know, the jury's still out on long-term studies on what artificial sweeteners are going to do to the body in the long term in terms of health consequences. They've only been around a short period of time. So I know in animal experiments, they do terrible things, but usually those doses are super physiological. So meaning we would never consume that much in a sitting. However, the fact of the matter is if we're consuming foods with artificial sweeteners, it has that sweet flavor that's going to habituate our taste buds to wanting more sweets, meaning we're going to actually consume in our diet probably other things high in sugar too, you know, with a great amount of pleasure, but a lot of extra calories. So the artificial sweeteners, you know, I would try to avoid them too. You know, a diet soda has no calories, but hey, you're still taking in that sweet taste and want to crave other things with sugar in them.
You don't use them, and you don't let the kids use them, right?
Nope, don't use them.
No, she didn't let me use them.
I slap them.
What I like to use, and I grow this, it's stevia, and I like to use it in my tea. What do you think of kind of a sweet tea with a
some of the natural sweeteners? I think that's a better way to go. But I still think that, you know, sugar is sugar, and, you know, treat it as such and know that you might want that sweet flavor. And, you know, I think it does other things to your diet. Just like salt, if you're used to consuming a lot of salt, you want the saltier foods. And if you're not used to it, you get away from it. So I think there's a fine balance. But I go for the natural sweeteners always over the artificial.
With salt, wouldn't you need enough water. I mean, you have to drink a lot of water anyway, and you do need salt in your diet.
Yes.
But people are using too much salt.
Jen and I disagree. I presume to disagree with Jen, which is ridiculous.
We don't disagree on this one.
There's a wonderful guy that I may write an article with who's been a lifelong professor of heart disease at leading New York medical schools, who says, you know, frankly, there's room in our diet for more salt. The whole salt thing ever since 1972 when the nation got on a big anti-salt roll is overstated. We have a tolerance for more salt than we actually use. Wonderful news for a guy like me who uses what I thought was much too much salt. On the other hand, the salt in prepared foods is maybe a little different, Jen.
Yeah, I think my beef with salt is that there are some studies that associate salt with hypertension, and there's plenty of others where there's no relationship, just like a lot of things. It's an individual thing. So I agree with Chris 100% there. Second, though, and so if you're going to put salt, I really think that adding salt to your own food as opposed to buying the processed foods that have so much sodium, you will get so much more satisfaction out of adding your own salt and taste it more than the salt that's put into prepared foods. And plus, I'm sort of anti-sodium in the fact that so much is put into prepared foods. And it's only that relationship that I really have a hard time with.
While we're up, it's worth saying, one of the things that Jen has slowly persuaded me of is it's a bum idea to eat any of those extruded foods that I love so much. All those prepared meats. I've been eating hot dogs since I could walk, and I love them, but they're just not that great for you. They're full of all kinds of junk, and they're mostly fat on a stick.
Yeah.
And fat, you know, you got to have a certain amount of fat, but not much. And it's got 9 calories per gram instead of 4 with all the other stuff. It's a bum idea. I love all that junk, but I'm getting better. I'm not perfect, but I'm getting better.
He's near perfect.
So what is your thought with vitamins, mineral supplements? I mean, anymore what I've heard is that when you grow the foods, they're just not as nutritious as they once were back in, who knows?
I'm going to go nuts on this one a little bit. So, you know, I'm not talking about organic versus grown. I think that you're always going to get so much more nutritional value out of something that grows out of the ground versus something that's manufactured in a plant. This was true for, breast milk versus formula, and it's true today for fruits and vegetables. There are things that we're still finding in fruits and vegetables that have great properties, that do great things for our body, that no one can ever think about manufacturing and let it doing it in the same natural way where it works probably in some godlike fashion that we can't even, you know, discern at this point. So totally get it from foods. I think the problem sometimes with shelf life, and you do lose some nutrient value after a couple, you know, weeks if an apple's been sitting there, and sometimes a frozen food that's flash frozen right when it's processed, you know, picked, it could be have a higher nutrient value. But heck, something that's whole and unadulterated, that's where you're going to have the best bang for your buck.
Bottom line, just so you said it, but you know, the bottom line is our position is that it does not make sense to do any supplements except in rare situations when a doctor says so. All you get out of supplements, it costs a fortune, and all you get is expensive urine. Not a good idea. Ditto on one-a-day vitamins. You just don't need them. Take that dough and join a gym.
Yeah, and I think that another thing that Americans, they take it as an insurance policy. They know they're not eating well, so they say, I take a, you know, multivitamin, so I'm okay. You know, why don't you think about eating a little bit better? And then, yeah, there are certain situations where you might be deficient in some things. Your doctor's like, hey, you really should take a multivitamin to cover your bases, but try to eat well first. And it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and they're sucking it from people. And most of them don't even have in them what they say they have in them. They're not well regulated.
When I grew up in Marblehead, Massachusetts, the biggest house in the town, and there were some good-sized houses, was a castle built by a woman named Lydia E. Pinkham. Lydia Pinkham was the mother of Lydia Pinkham's pink pills. And in the 1800s, everybody took Lydia. She made scores of billions of dollars when that was still real money. And our national appetite for pills and quick, easy solutions is bottomless. It doesn't make sense. We may never get over it. Mm-hmm. I asked Jen just yesterday, so Jen, shouldn't I be taking fish oil? And she says, how many times do you eat fish a week? I said, a couple. She said, that's enough. No fish oil? No. Oh, sorry.
This is a diet and exercise program for living strong, fit, and sexy. And these are a couple of fit and sexy people here. Now, Jen, I know that you are a rower.
Yeah.
And you get your exercise like that Chris, I'm not for sure about.
I am nothing.
He's everything.
I am not Jen. Let me be clear. Jen was not a rower. Jen is an All-American rower. I was a rower. I want you to know that I was the single scull champion of Harvard University in 1956 in what I believe was the slowest time in the history of that ancient race. Anyhow, I'm a terrible athlete, one of the worst in my school and everything, but I do work out 6 days a week. I ski hard at the age of 78, which is shocking. I ride my bike 100 miles every now and again, but I ride, 4 days a week. I walk the walk on this stuff, and I don't do it just to be a good guy. I do it because it works. I mean, at my age, a lot of my little friends are, they're dead. That's fun. And the rest of them are fat and stupid. This stuff does work, doesn't it, Jen?
Totally works. I mean, it makes a heck of a difference. It goes hand in hand with nutrition. We talk a lot in the book about what it does to your muscles and the age-related loss of muscle mass, which we call sarcopenia, losing 10% of your muscle mass per decade, how detrimental that can be.
Listen to this. This is really something. Nobody's heard the word sarcopenia, and it's happening to everybody who's listening to this program. It is hugely important, and you can do something about it.
Yeah, and this isn't just for people, Chris's age at 78. This is at the age of 30, we start to have this precipitous decline in muscle mass. And if you think about muscle, everybody's like, hey, muscle is metabolically active. It burns calories. Yeah, and then some. And if you don't have muscle and you lose anywhere from 5 to 10%, 30s, 40s, 50s, that starts to skyrocket a little bit, close to 8 to 10% after that. Think about your ability to move around, the ability to burn fuels, burn those extra calories. I mean, just to get in and out of the chair and do the simple things. But if you exercise, you can really mitigate that muscle loss. You can do many of the things at 78 that you could do when you're 40 or 50.
There are three pictures in the book, just three pictures. A picture of an MRI of somebody's leg, a young girl who's in great shape. It shows a little narrow ring of fat, which everybody has. Then there's a picture of an 80-year-old woman, and her leg is one-third fat. This sarcopenia thing, you don't just lose muscle, you substitute fat, which all those negative signals sent to fat for muscle. Then the next page is a picture of my leg, cute as a button. It's almost like that 18-year-old's. If you do some strength training, which I detest, you don't have to have sarcopenia. And listen, it makes a huge difference. If you have all that fat instead of muscle, you will fall down and go boom. Maybe not get up again. It makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. Although that's why they make those stair lifts and they have those little roundabout things that you can ride around. And
I've got a wonderful friend who's making a fortune selling tubs with doors in them. You can buy a $15,000-$20,000 tub because you don't have a door because you can't climb out. Take that money and go to the gym. Don't get a tub with a door in it.
Agreed.
Let's talk a little bit about food again. And Jen, of course, now when you and Chris do exercise, you guys do sweat. It seems like that you might need a little extra salt intake. We talked about that a little bit. But how about juicing? I mean, Jack LaLanne, he kind of brought this sport to light in a sense. You take that whole apple, put it in there. Yep. You get all the benefits of a whole apple, maybe? What do you think?
Yeah, one of our rules in the book, one of my rules, is not to drink your calories. And this also, I put my stake in the ground. Even the healthiest juice drinks out there, there's something about drinking your calories versus biting the apple versus drinking the juice. You don't get the satiety, the fullness from drinking. You can drink a couple hundred calories of a juice and still be pretty hungry within the next hour. Whereas if you had actually eaten those calories, you're going to stave off hunger a lot longer. And that means a lot for most people in this country. 2 out of 3 individuals being overweight or obese who are trying to lose a little bit of weight, it's a big, big deal. So trying to avoid that, that's great. I mean, this is not for the mega elite athlete who might need to take in those extra calories and the quickest way to get down is a juice after a workout. We're talking about the majority of Americans.
The vast majority.
Yeah, the vast majority. We're talking about 99.95% of Americans. It really should try to avoid drinking their calories if they can.
And while you're avoiding drinking those calories, for heaven's sakes, don't drink sports drinks. The notion that sports drinks are good for you is one of the great canards that's out there.
They're almost no different than a soda.
Crazy. It's just like drinking Cokes and Pepsis, and they ought to be regulated like tobacco.
And they market to all the teenagers like,
makes you crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's just not true. It's a sham.
Yeah.
And a shame.
And I think I read some statistics on even like your typical like Jamba juice, 300 to 500 calories, boom. That's bigger than some meals. So it's a lot and you're still hungry.
Yeah.
Run me maybe through one meal, one day that I've gone out, I did my exercise. Do I get snacks? I mean, do I have to eat maybe toast, white toast for breakfast with slathered with margarine on it? I mean, some good healthy stuff.
I'll do breakfast. You do lunch.
I hate lunch. You know that. I'd rather do breakfast.
I would do breakfast any. Yeah, I think I say in the book, one of the things I think that's we're talking fundamental changes in the way you eat. Is that hard? You bet. One of the easy things to do is to change the way you eat breakfast, because the stuff that you're familiar with that's good for you that you can eat for breakfast. Have the cooked whole wheat cereal. Tastes pretty good. Have the better dry cereals, ones that don't have whole wheat in them. Put berries on them. Put a ton of berries. That tastes pretty good. The hard part about eating right at breakfast is not eating the junk that we've all been taught our lives is the real breakfast. Don't eat almost all cereals because they're made with refined grains. Refined grains, all they took out was all the good stuff. All the good stuff. Whole wheat stuff, whole grain stuff, terrific. But we're so used to having the big bagel. Jen and I were sitting there eating bagels this morning, feeling like criminals. They taste terrific. The bagels, the bialys, the croissant. You go through the airport, Addie so-and-so's the cinnamon things. They're wonderful. But we've been trained to eat mountains of bread. Don't do it. Skip the bread at breakfast. Skip any, except for the whole wheat. Whole wheat, help yourself. But otherwise, don't do that. And have once a week, have eggs and dry whole wheat toast. How does that sound?
Can I step into breakfast, too? I think the big thing for a lot of Americans is they skip breakfast. Oh, yeah. And we know that breakfast eaters weigh less than people who don't eat breakfast. Seems completely counterintuitive, especially if you've done a workout. You're like, well, maybe I can get away with not eating breakfast. They eat more later in the day. And especially if you worked out in the morning, and Chris and I are big about working out in the morning. I roll out of bed and do my exercise. After exercise, we have a sports nutrition chapter in there. And, you know, you want to replenish. And of course, you want to eat breakfast, but you don't want to overplenish. But having, a good source of carbohydrates, so something whole grain, which is great, and some protein in there is actually the best for your muscles to restore that energy after a workout. So, 75% carbohydrate, 25% protein. So this could be yogurt and some healthy granola and berries. It could be the oatmeal with some berries. Find a good mix and you'll feel satiated and replenished and get through to midday at least.
One thing that's important, when we first met that very first day,
Jen, remember what you're eating?
I was sitting there with this big brown blueberry roll. I thought, hey, blueberry roll, I'll get some healthy so at least I'll look like a human being when she walks in. And she takes a look at this, and when we're all done, she says, that thing is horrible for you. I said, what? Blueberries? She says, no, it's made from white flour. It's made from refined. It doesn't matter if it's brown. It's a question of whether it's whole wheat or not. It's not whole wheat. You just had 700 calories worth of slop.
And it was this big.
You're stern.
This big.
It's true of all of it. All the stuff we eat for breakfast, you go get that healthy looking roll, it's covered with nuts and berries and whatnot. Forget it. If it's made from refined flour, it's just sugar. Don't eat it.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Well, and after she said that to you, you still wanted to work with her.
I threw up.
And he still eats bagels. Yeah. I'm not saying bagels are bad.
All right. So how about lunch?
Lunch, I think, is tough for a lot of people, especially if you're working. I'm a firm believer. I work full time. I try to bring food from home. I think a big pitfall for a lot of Americans is that they go out to eat for lunch. You don't have your act together. Like, of course, our lives are crazy. You go out to the nearest place and get something quick and easy.
You go to a fast food place.
And the statistics on eating out, if you eat out once a week, every day, I think they say the average, that adds up to an extra pound a year. So many of us eat out. 25% of Americans eat at a fast food joint every day. So that's pretty shocking. So it's easy extra calories. So I recommend whatever you made for dinner the night before, whatever leftovers you had, add a little extra veggies to it, bring it for lunch. That's what I do. So heavy on the veg, a little bit of grain, a little bit of protein. You don't need to have huge rolls with a little slab of turkey. Try to do the reverse. Focus on the veg.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard because you're not having veg for breakfast typically.
One of the big things to do is to stay out of fast food places. They've got salads and whatnot, but don't be delusional. Look at the lists of calories.
Watch the goop on the dressing.
Just ferocious. I mean, it's almost impossible to get something that's borderline good for you in a fast food place. It's a pity because the taste is delicious. I love that slop, but it's killing us dead. I mean, the kids shouldn't be allowed in, and there ought to be a law.
All right. Hey, I've got a PhD here. I've got a question. I've got Chris here that'll dummy it down, I'm sure. So, let me find out, kind of in layman's terms, if you will, what the heck is an antioxidant and what are free radicals?
Okay. Jen. Jen will take this one. So inflammation is one of those terms that we've all heard it now. If you look at like anti-inflammatory diet books out there, there's hundreds of them. So it's the notion that we have good inflammation. You bang up your hand, swelling, redness, but there's inflammation that's hidden. And that is what is going on in our bodies with fat tissue. There's signals. There are actually millions of signaling molecules that we can't see. There are things that scientists study in petri dishes, which I used to do, that signal other things to work a certain way or not to work a certain way. And the fat tissue around our midsection is sending out inflammatory signals all the time and having things break down, like the beta cells of our pancreas, which make insulin. You know, big terms here, but yeah, this, and they don't work right. And when that doesn't work right, we have things happen like prediabetes, insulin resistance, and then type 2 diabetes.
Talk about free radicals at the same time.
Yeah, and so free radicals are actually... you don't really want me to know, give you the technical terms, but they're basically molecules in the body that are lacking an unpaired electron, if you will. So they're looking for this, getting a pair from another molecule. So they basically take something for another molecule and damage that in the process. So they're looking around, they're missing a part, and they want to take a part from something else. When they take a part away from something else, those things fall apart. And within our cells, we have something that produces energy called mitochondria. Getting complicated, but those get damaged by free radicals. They don't work as well. And then when they don't work as well, they produce more free radicals. And those free radicals actually stimulate those inflammatory signals. So they all kind of work together in this inflammation process. And that's why we hear a lot about antioxidants, which are what quenches the inflammation. And we can get that from food, and we can get that from exercise.
Just to give you an idea, Jen refers to mitochondria, which is a scary word, but we are internal combustion engines just like a car, but instead of having one big engine in the middle, we've got billions of them out of the muscles. They're called mitochondria. Those are the engines that make us move. We are able to move because we have mitochondria. Free radicals attack mitochondria. They attack our ability to move. Nothing could be more basic.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when you exercise, you bring more oxygen into the blood.
Yep. And that goes to the mitochondria to actually produce energy. So we need that oxygen to actually produce energy in our body.
So when you're taking oxygen in, even if it's oxygenated drinks, does that cause free radicals or?
So this is, you're a good science
person. You're a little sneak. You've been reading behind my back.
You know, the thing that happens is with oxygen consumption, when it goes through metabolism in your cells, about 5 to 10% of those oxygen molecules aren't reduced to water, and those become free radicals. So oxygen gets turned into water, and then in the middle, those 5 to 10% become free radicals and are dangerous. So you think, oh my gosh, I'm consuming more oxygen, I'm going to produce more free radicals. But those who exercise have other molecules called enzymes in the body that get upregulated and basically mitigate any of that response, and if anything, make the body more antioxidant in its properties. So basically stomps out the inflammation. So exercising more, consuming more oxygen in that way is all a benefit. It's a net gain.
Thinner This Year, the brand new book by Chris Crowley and Jen Sacek, PhD. All right, well, let's find out if there's a website for Thinner This Year or one for Chris Crowley or Jen Sacek, PhD.
The easy one is go to thinnerthisyear.com. That'll get you there. YoungerNextYear.com will work too, but Thinner This Year is the way to go.
All right, what are we going to see when we go there?
Whole bunch of stuff. There's a picture of Jen rowing, which is a beautiful sight. There's a lot of blogging and chit-chat, a lot of tips, a lot of people who care about this stuff getting together.
And if I want to find out where you're going to be, I'm sure that'll be on there too.
You betcha.
This is a fantastic book. I tell you what, with reading it as much as I did, it's an inspirational guide, if you will, but it's a book. It's a diet and exercise program for living strong, fit, and sexy. Something that I want to do. I've got a little bit of this, I'd call it almost a Buddha belly. I've got these little things. Is it a muffin top on the side? And I think that, you know, I can get rid of this 10 pounds. I don't have that much to lose.
Hey, 10 pounds, you can surely do that in 6 months. You can do it less than that. And this book will show you how. There's a lot of why to in here. Jen takes you behind the scenes, but there's a lot of how to as well. There are drawings, there are exercises, there are menus. I mean, there's a lot of fancy theory, but there's also a lot of very nitty-gritty guidance.
All right. You heard the story. We didn't even touch on much of it. Thinner This Year, A Thinner You. Check out the book, Thinner This Year, by Chris Crowley and Jen Sacek, PhD. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
That was fun.
been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Chris Crowley and Jen Sajak, PhD, with their book, Thinner This Year. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.